Thanks for joining us today on the Entrepreneur on the Grow podcast series. You probably already know me as Jared, and I'm the head of education here at Startup School. Today, I have someone very exciting and incredibly inspirational with me, Matthew Henschel. I can't wait to pick your brain, and I can't wait to hear your story. Matthew, thanks so much for being here and taking the time. I know it's not always that easy to take time out of a busy day when you're hustling as hard as you have to. So thank you.
No, thank you, Jared. It's really awesome to be here. Love working with you the last couple of years, and it's very exciting to be able to spend this time together.
Fantastic. So you're an engineering graduate from UCT, with the heart and soul of an entrepreneur, apparently. So your latest startup, which I think is not actually your latest startup, but we'll get into the discussion, or SkillUp, and that's making some serious waves. And we did a quick, Google search to see, how many waves you are making, and it's pretty impressive to see what's going on there. And you've been featured in VentureBeam, Disrupt Africa, and various other online publications. So tell us, what's the fuss about when it comes to that initial SkillUp baby that you
So like you mentioned, it's not the latest, but it is definitely the one that sort of took off the most 3 years ago when we started it. But even if you do read the VentureBeam article, you'll see that it itself was the fourth attempt in online education. So we've been doing education startups now for 5 years, and we're really starting to find traction. And SkillUp was the first time where we got some things right. It took us a while to get there. SkillUp Tutors is a company that is essentially a marketplace to find a tutor in South Africa. So if you're a parent and your student is in, or your son or daughter's in matric, you say, "I need a matric math students in Sandton," and one of our tutors will be there. You pay on the website. That's how we make our fee from charging the tutors. And yeah, it's a marketplace. We not something I would necessarily advertise too much, but it's an Airbnb type model. It's B2C, and it's grown successfully. 3 years ago, we started it. Four of us sat around a computer. Huge amount of learning since. Huge amount of learning before. And finally, actually, this last couple of months, it's the first time it's achieved profitability, which
That's
is how you should
fantastic.
start a business. But we went the venture route, and it's been very exciting. And it's really growing now quite organically. We figured it out. We figured out how to acquire students, acquire tutors, make sure the service is good. So it's fun, yeah.
If I remember correctly, 3 years ago, you actually were on the very first Startup School entrepreneurship course,
Yes.
and that was when this whole thing was in
Correct.
its infancy. So,
Yeah.
and I know soon thereafter you got funding through, I think it was
From Knife
Knife
Capital,
Capital.
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that experience, because I know there's obviously in the entrepreneurial game, there's sort of people see this as
Yeah.
the golden ticket,
Yeah.
getting funding.
Yeah.
Was it everything?
Yeah, no, it's great. Great question. I actually also was listening to your recent podcast with Rob Paddock, and he touched on funding, I think, in a way. Sort of, wish I listened to that podcast 3 years ago. No, Knife has been brilliant to work with. So what actually happened when SkillUp first started, we thought that's what we needed. And we went out and tried to raise funding right in the beginning when we had an idea, really. And we sort of, met with five people. Everyone sort of said no. And that was the best thing that happened. We managed to then go through family and friends and got a couple of seed investors just to sort of pay server costs. And it was really the best thing that ever happened to not get funding in the beginning. And then we all of a sudden started getting quite a bit of traction. Early on, we got quite a bit of traction quite quickly. And then we all of a sudden realized that, okay, there's a very obvious way where we need funding now. Like, there's a very way we can clearly say, hey, we need to acquire clients. That's the cost to acquire a client. This is the lifetime value of the client. And this was our original premise, expand through there. And when we went to Knife, we went to them, went to a couple of people, but when we went to them, it was with the premise of saying, well, this is what we have working in South Africa, and we think it will continue, but we want to grow this internationally into the online lesson space. The original sort of idea was, or the thesis was, let's sell our tutors around the world. We have some high quality South African English speaking tutors. And if we can get them to pay in pounds or dollars, or maybe even in the East, we can really just, that was the business model in the beginning. And Knife invested in that, and they invested in our team. We had there's four of us, we're all primarily software or engineers. And yeah, they really have backed us the last 3 years. So it's been a good, especially as you were here now coming up, how it's changed.
Yes.
And I sometimes look back at the original metrics. I was like, gee, how did, how, what did they see? And it's, you know, I think it's really the guys who I work with are much smarter than I am. And they saw that. And the guys are, we've stuck together for this long. So I think that's what, that really stands out for having Knife. They've stuck with us.
Yeah.
They've been patient. They've helped a huge amount.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's a great story to hear because I think there are a lot of entrepreneurs out there who don't necessarily get the right partners and the right advice, and that relationship can be a really challenging one.
Mm.
So I just love this next step in the story, and I know I'm sort of preempting it, but you had this thing and it presented something else.
Yeah.
And I'd love to hear how that kind of shifted and what that something else was.
Yeah, so what the funding really did for us, and we were lucky, is it bought us time. And it bought us time to make mistakes and try experiments. And that's something that Rob said in your previous podcast, was how, you know, you need to have a good business model, then get funding if you need it. You know, and even if you get funding, try and forget about the funding.
Yes.
And the one thing funding allowed us to do was forget about it. For, you know, we knew we had a year and a half runway. We knew we could, you know, work hard for a year and a half without having to worry about whether we're going to, you know, pay rent or eat. And that was really good for us. And so what happened next is we had this thesis of selling South Africans overseas, and we actually realized a very interesting thing there. And what we did is we had a problem because our initial unique selling point was the fact that we were the most affordable tutoring company. We were the most affordable. We were taking the lowest rates. We were charging the lowest fees. And this was because we asked parents what they wanted. 9 out of 10 parents, when we asked them, said, I want the most affordable. That's the most important thing for me. So it was our unique selling point.
Yes.
But then the data showed something different. When we would put 2 tutors in front of the parent of seemingly the same quality, 7 out of 10 of them weren't picking the most affordable. So this was a problem, because when we started advertising overseas, we very quickly realized that low cost in education looks like low quality. And it's kind of obvious now, but we saw that in a big way.
Yeah.
The numbers showed it to us. The feedback showed it to us, and the data didn't lie. So we couldn't get the cost per acquisition lifetime value correct overseas. And what was happening in this time was, you know, it was a double-edged sword, because then we were also not earning as much money, so we couldn't advertise aggressively. So instead of blowing all the money on advertising, we sort of ran around in circles, and we sort of thought, where is it that we need to go? And then while this was happening, exactly what you alluded to, is we were using some online software for that, to have these online lessons, like a Skype or Zoom equivalent. And it just was letting us down. So we didn't really know what we were doing, but I said to our team, I said, the one thing we know is that we're eventually going to have to build our own software, so let's build it. Let's just build it now. I'm going to go and figure out what it is we need to do. Let's just start building away. And then we launched it to SkillUp. You know, the initial versions of it. And it just started getting quite a bit of traction. All of a sudden, tutors started using it. They liked it. They weren't using the old software. They were using this one. Then we saw tutors starting to say to their students, I prefer to teach online. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, we thought, oh, this is cool. And there was a lot of things we were very focused on. What do you need to make a lesson effective online? We got a bit obsessed with it.
Yes.
And then we triggered a Google alert. We wrote a blog on the new release of our online service. And in a weekend, we got 4 North American companies email us and say, we want your software. Jeez. And we thought, well, geez, we could do that.
Yeah.
We opened up an API for them, or an endpoint. And all of a sudden, the next week, we had 3 out of the 4 guys paying monthly for that software. And it was great, because we were earning a similar amount on a per lesson basis or per hour basis. It was paying in dollars. It was recurring revenue. It was, you know, higher profit margins with the software. We could speak to the engineers, you know, so it was really up our alley, what we enjoyed. And it started going well. And that business we actually pulled out to the lesson space.
Okay.
And the lesson space, again, is what's growing quite well now. But, I mean, as you know, it's not where we're focusing right now. Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, what I love about this goes back to your engineering kind of roots, is also knowing where your skill set is and going, we can actually take the time to build this thing.
Yeah.
You know, because we've got the skills within our ambit,
yeah.
You know, to tackle it and just do it.
Yeah.
I love that. So, you know,
yeah.
there are a lot of people in the entrepreneurship space who are good and passionate and skilled at what it is they're doing,
yeah.
but they have a distrust for actually doing it themselves.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's so lovely to hear you went, no, yeah. let's just do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, one thing I could definitely say, like, it's definitely been our biggest strength. It's also been our biggest weakness.
In what respect?
And, yeah, and I think the biggest learning, if I had to have like one big learning we've had over the years, and it's a story that started off, and it's now become our core value in our company. Our core value is begin with the end in mind. You have to think about the end of a process. You know, if you think of a product, you sourcing raw materials, you procuring raw materials, you manufacturing raw materials, eventually it ends in a sale. And engineers have this tendency to, we have this tool, so let's just hit everything that comes our way with this yeah. hammer, you know? And I think we love to think about solving problems with product, where we realize that we had to begin with the end in mind with sales. And how that happened was, I have a younger brother, his name's Mike, Mikey, and he is a nature conservationist. He hates any minute he has to spend in front of a computer. And, you know, 2.5, 3 years ago when we first launched SkillUp, we said, it was 6 p.m. that night, myself and one of my founders were sitting there, and we were just about to hit launch, basically, yeah. for lack of a better word or description. And we said, hey, Mikey, why don't you just use it? Just be our first user. We were so excited. We thought he was going to be so chuffed. Another beautiful thing about Mike is he doesn't hold back. And he went onto our website, and it was an absolute disaster. He was pressing buttons. He wasn't reading anything. Things were breaking, and we started off, myself and my colleague, were saying like, why, don't do that, just read it. And then we just actually stopped. We were like, this is our user.
Yeah.
Mike, this, and I kid you not, that has now been called the mic test. Now, everything that we launch, it has to go through the mic test approval. And the thing about the mic test that was so fascinating was that night, we deleted about 2 months of code. Two months of work thrown into the bin. And we launched the product at 2 o'clock that morning out of from the Steers. And just down the road, in fact, and we and it had success. And I think the important thing for us there was you have to focus on the end result, and the end result is success for your customer.
Yeah.
Right. It's make sure the customer's having a great time. And with this code for kids that we really are focused on now, it's all about focusing on the end customer. And we as engineers now have to spend more time around a whiteboard, more time speaking to customers, more time sitting in classrooms. You know, that's what we spend our time doing. And when you're scaling a business, it's not about what you can add to the business. It's far more about what you can take away.
Mm-hmm.
And we really try to look at, like, really scrutinizing what can we take away from our customer journey, from our product? What can we remove? And that was thanks to Mike. Yeah.
So you mentioned Code for Kids now. This
yes.
is, this
yeah.
is the exciting sort of new
yeah.
Project on the go.
Yeah.
And taking up a lot of your time. And
yeah.
And there has been some really interesting stuff
yeah.
around this, and I'm so excited about what
yeah.
What its potential is. But it's yeah. already starting to make some serious waves. So tell us about
Code for Kids.
Yeah.
Really excites me. You know, so what was happening in this time when we were running around like headless chickens trying to figure out what it is we were doing with our lives? We it was a total by chance. My niece was at Rustenburg Girls Junior School in Cape Town. And she was in the computer lab, and she told me the one day that her computer teacher was leaving and they were going to stop the computer class. Now, for 2 years, I had been teaching my niece coding.
Mm.
Now, I wasn't trying to make her an expert. She wasn't necessarily the most obsessive coder. I just knew that this was a very important thing to learn. It had given me a gateway to the future.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could honestly say that after 2 years of working an hour every 2 weeks with my niece, she was competent to almost be employable as like a junior front-end developer.
Brilliant.
You know, and obviously she's in grade six at the time, and I'm thinking, this is an important thing. I'm glad we've done this. But when she told me her computer teacher was leaving and doing a bit of digging, I realized that they were doing very much what I was doing 20 years earlier in computers. So I went to the school, and I literally just said, can we for a term, you know, have one of our tutors from SkillUp take over the lesson. We'll make sure it's a success. We don't know what to do. I was at the time going to use some third-party software, but we will make sure it's a success. And the school, completely my heroes, like gave us a chance.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, they were. They, honestly, if they hadn't given us a chance, we might not be here anymore. Like, SkillUp may not no longer exist. And so we started this as not a pilot. We started as a side project. It was a we spent far too much time. I became completely obsessive with what is the student getting out of this lesson? What is happening in this classroom? What is the teacher getting? And we developed this solution. And then all of a sudden, one term turned into two terms, turned into the rest of the year. And they're still with us today. And at the end of that year, what happened was we had some other schools contact us. They had heard about the program. And they said they were quite interested in doing it at their school. What was amazing about this program was we could actually create our own curriculum, because there is no curriculum for junior school coding, or robotics or IT or computer labs. But we had the software. We're using the lessons-based software to run it because it was built for that.
Yes.
And so we had this, we had the software, and then all of a sudden, with our curriculum on it, it really worked. The students were really engaged. The engagement was what kept us going. That was what we became obsessed with. And then, January this year, Cyril Ramaphosa announced, he announced that we're going to teach coding in primary school. And we've met 100 schools in the first 3 months of the year, and another 200 since. It's been amazing.
Yes.
And, I think the real thing about Code for Kids that we're trying to do is when we met with those first 100 schools, we became obsessed with not going there and selling our product, became obsessed with beginning with the end in mind.
Yeah.
Now Code for Kids has been going for more than a year, almost 18 months, and we only launched our website 2 months ago. And it was just, I think it's something that you do learn. You learn through these processes. And, SkillUp Tutors, it is a B2C, once-off purchase, low profit margin business, difficult to scale. The lesson space, high profit margin, monthly recurring revenue, quite a small addressable market. But now we're looking at primary schools. It's good profit margins, even though we're charging 100 to 200 rand per student per year, or $10 to $20. So it's half the price of a textbook for a school. We can keep it affordable. But think how many junior schools there are in the world, or primary schools there are in the world. And we've learned, we looked at things more critically. We focused exactly, we want to make sure this is amazing for a student, a teacher, a parent, and a school.
Yeah.
And we said, what's important for the teacher? And it wasn't that, what came out was Sunday nights are the worst. I spend Sunday night preparing.
Preparing, yeah.
So a teacher never has to watch more than a 10-minute video before a lesson, and they'll know everything. And they watch it at 2x speed, right? That's how we focus fully on the teacher.
Yeah.
Teachers don't feel supported. Teachers are powerful individuals. If you can think of the best teacher and your worst teacher, that's a strong memory for you, Teachers are hugely valuable, and our content is worthless without a teacher.
Mm.
So the first unique thing is we said it has to be teacher-centric. And the second unique thing is we said it has to be relevant. So instead of playing a game, they have to be learning real code. They learn to build websites, the HTML, CSS, JavaScript. And it's real content. Instead of a made-up character, we create a website on South Africa, an app on our school's sports team, the solar system, famous woman in history. So it's and robotics is a big part. Excel is a big part. We're sitting in these classes, and the best thing is to go to one of these schools, and we see it, and we're like, oh my goodness, I wish I had that class when I was a kid. And the students are loving it. They're all talking and helping each other. Oh, it gets me excited.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
Now, what I love about them, you said it in your story, is it doesn't, when you were on the path, starting, the path wasn't necessarily that clear. You thought it was, and then...
Yeah.
There were these things, these opportunities that presented themselves, but all the while you've kind of really scaffolded and built a very solid foundation for what you're good at. And I really love that kind of story. And I know that you feel like this is all really new, and you're just saying things are happening quite quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of strength in your story and you as an entrepreneur. And
sure.
I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about kind of some of the things that you along this journey that were that you went on, what did you do to keep yourself motivated, keep yourself kind of staying on the path, even though that path, as you say, changed quite a lot?
Yeah, gee, that's a good question. I honestly believe the single most important thing is the people you're doing it with. Like I said, the funding gave us this time. It gave us... we couldn't walk away when SkillUp didn't work. We didn't stop. We just kept at it. And it wasn't because we couldn't, because the funding was there. We knew we wanted to make it. We wanted to make you know, Skillup, it's a profitable business. It's growing, you know, 20% every year, but it's not exactly, you know, it's not going to be this huge startup that we necessarily envisioned in the beginning. And we wanted that for the challenge, for the, we want to figure out where the, you know, the ceiling is. And I think it was a high level of motivation, but it's the three founders that I started with, there were four of us, which is lucky, you know, technical background, lucky. The fact that we've all stayed together for 3.5-4 years now, it's lucky.
It's a big deal, yeah.
And it's something we take extremely seriously.
Yes.
The fact, if, you know, we had one of our values, I told you, is begin with the end in the mind. Yeah. In mind. The other one is stabbing in the front. The second one, there's a couple more, or one more. And stabbing in the front is like the opposite of stabbing in the back. You know, we created this culture where we like, say it to my face.
Yes.
And if you're ever speaking to someone and you wouldn't say it if they were in the room, about someone else, get them in the room. And yes. We've taken stuff like that very, very seriously. So I think it's been a big part is you don't want to let your team down.
Mm.
You can see they're giving everything. They've given up jobs where they're earning, you know, 5 times more to be there. And it's I think they make it worthwhile.
Okay.
Yeah.
Surround yourself with the right people. Yeah. That's a great, it really is important. And it's a very tricky one. So it actually leads me to another question. Yeah. You talked about, when I spoke to you recently about, yeah, it's growing now. You need to find other people, and finding people isn't that easy. So you're lucky; you've got this core team, great people. You're now looking at getting bigger.
Yeah,
you've got to find other people.
Yeah,
what's your approach to
doing that? Cool. I'll share with you our current approach.
Yes,
but I can guarantee you it's not going to work forever. And we've been quite lucky. So we got about 10 people on the team now. And so 6 new people. It's and you know, we every month we're looking at sort of now the new person that can fill the gaps, and even by January it might be closer to 14. So it's going quite quickly. And you know, it really has felt like for 3 years we've been pushing a big cement wheel up a hill, and now it's sort of going down the hill the other way, you know, and that we're struggling to keep up. And I'm realizing that people are going to become more and more my focus and my time. If I have to look at like where I'm spending my time, it's on people. I think that's going to create a bigger percentage. And one of the things we've been lucky with is we originally started looking for people about a year ago now. And we were sort of, we had these job descriptions. We did the advertising as you do when you're looking for someone to fill a gap. And it was a teacher's role for Code for Kids. And we just had no luck. Eh? We would have people coming who, you know, hadn't looked at the website for an interview. And it's just like, oh, well, this is... And I actually got quite annoyed with that, you know, and I said, no, fine, I'm going to do this job. I'm going to do it. If it takes me an extra hour a day, it's fine. And I did, you know, and it was good because I learned exactly what we needed. But then what happened, and it was not planned, totally by luck, a friend's reached out and we had our first, his wife was interested in working with us, and sort of we, you know, she had come inbound to working with us. And we said, you know, like, she had this idea of what we wanted. And I said, well, we've got this job description that's been sitting there for a while. Like, does that interest you?
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, it sort of can work. I have absolutely no coding background. And that was, like, actually a good thing. We were looking for someone who had no coding background because we had enough of that. And she's now is our head teacher, heads up the office in Johannesburg. And she's brilliant, right, at what she does. And I honestly can say with the people we'd hired in the past before her who weren't inbound, it's been chalk and cheese. It's totally different. I spend my time figuring out how to make the company work for them instead of how they can work for the company. I'm like constantly like, you know, setting vision, setting direction. So I thought this worked. So what I then did is I went and made a couple more job descriptions and I didn't look. And it got to the point where it was getting quite desperate. You know, we needed someone, a couple people in fact. And I was ready to start looking. And honestly, in 2 weeks, 2 people, you know, inbound came and said, hey, we're interested in working. 3-4 months ago, those people joined our team and they have been phenomenal.
Yeah.
Right. And I can already see the next 2 that, you know, are in the pipeline. And it's just that having somebody come in inbound and even if you have to be patient about it, I think it's something to take very seriously.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can really then focus on what's important.
Mm.
And having those people, and it asks the question of like, where do we want to go with the company? Do we want 100 employees if it could have? And I would honestly argue we probably would try and like really focus on really, really quality people who really knew what they were doing and were supported with everything they needed, as opposed to throwing people at the problem.
Yeah.
I think everyone says don't do that, you know. Yeah. But everyone seems
it's
to.
It's very difficult not to, yeah. though. You know, it takes a very brave person to let something happen,
yeah.
as opposed to forcing it
yeah.
into being.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you, as you rightly point out, you can't really force people.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to a person, they got. There's got to
yeah.
be something that sparks, something that that,
yeah, exactly.
that really
yeah.
works there.
Yeah.
I love that story, the inbound.
Yeah.
For now. And so often, but I think largely, if you talk to successful entrepreneurs and you listen to their stories, so much of their team is people who have naturally found their way into
yeah.
that team, as opposed to very deliberate going out
yeah.
and finding and hunting. So that's
yeah.
pretty cool. You say, you know, for now, that indicates like a little bit of a fear there, but
yeah.
are there any other fears that you would say sit quite strongly for you in this stage of,
yeah.
of the game as an entrepreneur? Because I think one of the things we also want to talk about with the people listening is
yeah.
fear is a real thing when
yeah.
you're in business. So
yeah.
what are yours, if you don't mind sharing some of
yeah.
those, and maybe how you sort of overcome them or manage them?
Yeah, good question. Sure. I think, you know, ups and downs, they're going to happen in any business. And I think for me, the downs used to have a far bigger effect
mm.
on me. And I think now you can see the downs for what they are, and you can see that the down is going to eventually turn it up. As I was discussing with you earlier on, before we started, I was just saying how... we're in an up right now, and I'm actually now starting to get scared because I know that something has to, you know,
yes,
what's going to
yeah.
happen, you know?
Yeah.
And I think the fears, sort of just remain the same. The fear of when nothing's going wrong, you know, everyone talks about these unknowns. You never really know what's
mm.
my biggest, the thing that we are the most obsessed with is that person in the classroom having a good time? And I think my fear is if we miss when they're not.
Yeah,
and you know that's where we throw our resources. Like, are they having a good time? And you know what? If a customer leaves because they're not having a good time, yeah, it will affect me. But I'm not going to lose as much sleep as I might have 3 years ago about it. 3 years ago, if a customer had a different, you know, didn't like it, you know, it would keep me up. And
yes.
I think that fear really could turn into fuel. And I think that's an important part in terms of fears. I think as we get more people, I start to get a little bit, you know, we have employees now who are, you know, people who are joining us who have very other attractive options, you know, and you're sort of like, oh, well, like, you're going to have to make this work now.
Yeah.
So, and I wouldn't say it's a fear yet. It's more of an encouragement.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to
yeah.
chat to us today. What I would like to point our users to is where they can go and find out a little bit more about what it is you're doing. So
yeah.
you said 2 months ago, you know, you've launched the website for Code
yeah,
for Kids.
Yeah.
So what is the website?
It's getcodeforkids.com.
Okay,
yeah.
cool. So
it's really just a landing page.
That's
right
fine.
Yeah,
as
yeah,
long
yeah.
as people can, you know, can go and
yeah.
check it out. And in terms of your personal story as an entrepreneur, your LinkedIn profile, you have
yeah.
people to connect with you.
My LinkedIn profile is a shrine to Code for Kids. So
okay.
or SkillUp or Root or whatever it is we're doing.
Okay.
That's I really try and keep that updated on the story.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
so that's
yeah.
fantastic. So people can go and find
yeah.
out more and connect with you if they'd like to.
Yes, I'd love that. Yeah. No, thank you very much
yeah.
for your time. It's a real
thank
pleasure.
You.
I love what you guys are doing.
And we will hopefully have you on again sometimes in the near future when you are at a couple of thousand
yes.
primary schools.
Yes, that's the goal. That's the goal, definitely.
Thanks, man.
No, thanks, Jared.